And welcome to Canadian Watch Uncommon for December 16th. I'm Dave Raven. It's great to be with you, and happy holidays to everyone. We've got a compelling show for you today, I think. I'm going to start off with longtime consumer advocate and corporate critic Ralph Nader and his vision of how to lessen the corporate sway, or some would say stranglehold, over Congress. And we'll talk with Dr. Matthew Taylor, a visiting scholar at the Center on Faith and Justice at Georgetown University, about the insidious sway of Christian nationalism over our executive branch. A very important perspective and insight into what's going on in this country and with our federal government. But first, you might have noticed that we're in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and I'm joined now by my wonderful co-host, Ray Valencia. Ray, what do you think?
Good morning. Good morning. It's great to be here, and we are in fundraising drive and just thinking so much about the news flow over the last few days and, you know, how this is impacting our local community and how important community radio is. And I know so many of us are so grateful for it. And we just really want to say how much we appreciate our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, it's we're operating out of a different model here at WPFW.
And as we see this consolidation of media, of media, the importance of community radio cannot be overstated. And we do. We need your help. We're reaching out today. Now is the time. I know we've been thinking about it. The year is coming to an end, but now is the time to actually pick up the phone and become more of a stakeholder in this project. And please join us at 202-588-9739.
He must not be on.
Hello.
Go ahead. Ralph
Nader here.
David, go ahead. We have dead air.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice wherever you are.
Mutual aid, the act of taking care of each other, comes in many forms. One such form is supporting WPFW. At a time when so many are hurting, if you are doing well financially and want to do good, we invite you to give the gift of WPFW. Emancipatory media is truly the gift that keeps on giving. A tax-deductible donation can be made anytime at WPFWFM.org or from Sunday, December 14th through Saturday, December 20th, during our pledge drive by calling 800-222-9739. It is your continued support that allows us to do the work of building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
This season, Joy is taking over Anacostia. From December 11th through the 22nd, Anacostia is celebrating 12 Days of Joy along Marion Barry and MLK Jr. Avenue Southeast. Festive, free events and experiences from the annual Emoja Holiday Market to hands-on maker workshops and live concerts. With a Joy Pass, there will be surprise drops of joy with prizes and treats at participating businesses. 12 Days of Joy and Holiday Magic in Anacostia. Art2Gogo.org for more info.
And on with the show.
Good morning.
I lost contact there. Going to go back to introducing our esteemed guest. It's the 60th anniversary of consumer advocate and corporate critic Ralph Nader's Unsafe at Any Speed.
You're not coming through.
That went after the safety record of automobile manufacturers in general and General Motors Covair in particular. He went on to found a number of advocacy and watchdog groups, including the Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG, the Center for Auto Safety, and Public Citizen. He's run for president four times, while writing numerous books. I think it's up to 24 now. Extraordinary. His latest.
Am I on? Coming through clearly, audio.
His latest book is Civic Respect, and he's the founder of the Capitol Hill Citizen newspaper, where he's written a recent piece entitled "Congress is there for the taking. Now's the time to take it." Ralph Danner joins us now. Welcome, sir, to Community Watch and Comment. Maybe we don't have Mr. Nader coming in and out.
That's strange. I can hear you great, Mike.
Mr. Nader?
Yes?
This is Medea Benjamin of Code Pink with the WPFW editorial. As Washington escalates towards confrontation with Venezuela, opinion polls show that in the United States and Venezuela, the majority oppose U.S. intervention. Yet instead of listening to the people, the Trump administration is charging ahead with escalation, labeling Venezuelan officials as terrorists, asserting the right to strike vessels in the Caribbean without evidence or congressional approval, tightening sanctions. This week, President Trump said something important, that he is willing to talk to President Nicolas Maduro. We hope so, but let's not be naive. The U.S. has used talks before as a cover for military action, including against Iran, engaging diplomatically one day while preparing strikes the next. So we have to ask, is this a sincere step towards peace or the prelude to something far more dangerous? The fundamental truth is that Venezuela is not our enemy, and war is not the answer. 28 million Venezuelans have already endured years of economic warfare through sanctions that block medicine, fuel, and basic goods. A U.S. military strike would only ignite an internal conflict and shatter countless lives. We've seen this story before: Iraq, Libya, Syria. So today, Code Pink calls on the White House to honor the will of the people and calls on Congress to rein in unauthorized military force and lift sanctions so Venezuelans can rebuild their own country in peace. For WPFW, I'm Medea Benjamin with Code Pink. You can learn more at codepink.org/Latin America.
Mutual aid, the act of taking care of each other, comes in many forms. One such form is supporting WPFW. At a time when so many are hurting, if you are doing well financially and want to do good, we invite you to give the gift of WPFW. Emancipatory media is truly the gift that keeps on giving. A tax-deductible donation can be made anytime at WPFWFM.org or from Sunday, December 14th through Saturday, December 20th, during our pledge drive by calling 800-222-9739. It is your continued support that allows us to do the work of building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
This season, Joy is taking over Anacostia. From December 11th through the 22nd, Anacostia is celebrating 12 Days of Joy along Marion Barry and MLK Jr. Avenue Southeast. Festive, free events and experiences from the annual Emoja Holiday Market to hands-on maker workshops and live concerts. With a Joy Pass, there will be surprise drops of joy with prizes and treats at participating businesses. 12 Days of Joy and Holiday Magic in Anacostia. Art2Gogo.org for more info.
Okay, Ralph Nader, are you with us? I hear nothing. Sorry, folks out there in WPFW FM. We're having technical difficulties here. There it is. Maybe our esteemed engineer can call up our next guest and see if he can come on early. I think we're just having difficulty connecting
with Ralph Nader. Nader, we'll get him back on another time. We can maybe just touch on some of the issues that Ralph Nader was going to talk about. He's written a current article for his Capitol Hill Citizen newspaper. Check it out, Capitol Hill Citizen newspaper. And the piece is entitled "Congress is There for the Taking. Now's the time to take it." And if Ralph Nader comes in at some point, then we'll have him talk about it, but I'll just run it down. He's talking about the current health of Congress, which is just completely overrun by corporate interests. There's something like 1,500 corporate lobbyists dealing with the Congress, and it is in no shape or form matched by lobbyists for the public interest. We're just not being represented. The corporate power is running over the public interest. Some examples, I think we can say, of corporate sway over Congress. I think he's on. Are you with us, Ralph Nader?
Yes, I'm sure. On.
Are you there, Mr. Nader?
Yes.
Oh, great. I'm just filling in for you, if you will, just talking about the extraordinary corporate sway over Congress and the number of corporate lobbyists versus public interest lobbyists. I mean, it's way out of whack. What are we talking, 1,500 corporate lobbyists?
Oh, much more than that. There are almost 500 full-time lobbyists on Congress for the drug industry. You can imagine how many lobbyists there are for banking, insurance, for the military budget, for all the corporate welfare, handouts, giveaways, subsidies, bailouts. You know, Congress is a huge money pot, honeypot.
Right.
They don't work by remote. There are some citizen groups on Congress, they work remote. How can you work remote? You got to be up there, going up and down the corridors, going into the offices the way the big corporate lobbyists do.
Right, right. I mean, demonstrate so far, but that direct lobbying is so important. I think the whole sway of power is kind of summed up by, a couple of this town. He's off again. Okay. We're just having trouble with contact with Ralph Nader. We'll keep trying. But some examples, just mentioned Senator Dick Durbin, who is just being forthright and saying the banks own this town. Another example of corporate largesse is the proposed National Defense Authorization Bill. It's over $900 billion, and that's more, that's something like $8 billion more than Trump asked for. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of lobbyists from Lockheed Martin, et cetera, that are pumping up our military so we can, you know, flood the Caribbean with our military.
Just had a busy signal.
And elsewhere. Are you with us, Ralph Nader?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you interested in talking about impeachment?
I want to get to that, but I think it's so important to understand the sway that corporate America has and what you're recommending for how to deal with it. I mean, I've talked about, just mentioned the proposed National Defense Authorization Bill, $900 billion. You know, we cut off SNAP funding. We're cutting off what? Head Start. And on and on and on, but we've got $900 billion, close to $1 trillion for the National Defense Authorization Bill. If you could talk about that.
Well, what you're describing, David, is a corporate dictatorship. You have Donald Trump, who is using his office to enrich himself, The papers have been full of that. Cryptocurrency, contracts, deals, you name it. And he's a corporatist. And he's going after the weak, the powerless, the poor. He's the worst racist president in American history by far since perhaps Johnson back after the Civil War. And guess who he's letting off? You don't see any moves by Trump against the big corporations. They love him. He's deregulating what's left of the regulatory apparatus and the executive branch. He's giving them tax cuts. He's subsidizing them. The only thing they don't like is he's having the U.S. government take a cut of certain corporations like Intel when he negotiates deals on these subjects like artificial intelligence and so on. He has dropped over 100 criminal prosecutions in the Justice Department. I mean, that's unheard of. There were over 100 prosecutions against the corporate crooks, and he's dropped them all. And he's cutting the enforcement budget and sending FBI agents who've been working on corporate crime, stealing money from hard-earned pay by workers and consumers, you know, all the consumer fraud that the papers write about. Well, the FBI agents have a team to look into this and bring cases to the prosecutors, and he's shifting them over to immigration. He's shifting to work on cities, you know, like Chicago or Los Angeles. So we have a corporate dictatorship, and we ought to call it that. And it has far-reaching consequences on our children and our grandchildren. You pointed out the attacks. There are going to be millions pushed out of Medicaid. There are going to be millions pushed out of Obamacare. You mentioned Head Start. How about Meals on Wheels? That's being cut. Protecting the country against climate violence. He wants to shut down FEMA. Can you imagine? It's like shutting down the fire department. Right. And he's laid off huge numbers of FEMA employees, and they can't help the states when the hurricanes, droughts, and giant wildfires hit. And as far as pandemics go, you know, there's a book just came out called The Big One, saying it's not if, it's only when the next pandemic hits, by Professor Osterholm, acknowledged expert, University of Minnesota. And what has Trump done? He's cut thousands of workers from the Centers for Disease Control, NIH, cut their budget, and turned around and gave the Pentagon $150 billion, with a B, dollars, more than the generals asked for. So we have a dangerously unstable president at the helm. His ego is insatiable, and we have to go back to the people. You know, whenever countries get into trouble, they got to go back to the people to organize, and the key institution is Congress. That's the key institution. It's the only power to hold them accountable that he can't control. Now, someone may say, listening here, yeah, but the Republicans control Congress. Well, look at history. When Nixon won 49 out of 50 states in 1972, and he was 60% in the polls, less than 2 years later, because of the Watergate scandal, he was out. He was about to be impeached and removed, and the Republican senators went to the White House and said, your time is up, Mr. President, and he resigned. And his transgression, David, as you recall, tiny compared to the most impeachable president in American history. You know, Trump keeps wanting to impeach judges who rule against him. Well, Jamie Raskin said recently that a shadow hearing in the House of Representatives on impeaching Trump to educate the public, quote, was a good idea, end quote. Okay, well, when is it going to happen? Look at the polls.
I want to talk, we're running out of time, sir. I want to talk about the legacy of your Unsafe at Any Speed. It's the 60th anniversary, and you talk about the fact that you were able to have a big influence on auto safety in this country and import some other manufacturers around the world. And it only took about 1,000 informed activists around the country to make cars a lot safer. I want to look at real quickly, as I said, we're running out of time, but that's an extraordinarily important model that needs to be applied to what's going on now.
Exactly. I've always said it has never taken more than 1% of active citizens in congressional districts knowing what they're talking about, focusing on Congress, and reflecting public opinion, who doesn't want health and safety, to defeat the corporate powers on Capitol Hill. We did it with, as you say, 1,000 people around the country to regulate the most powerful industry in the country, the auto industry, regulate them with mandatory safety standards, with fuel efficiency standards, and with emission control standards. And as you say, that's a good model for today, because, you know, people now can communicate free over the Internet. They don't have to pay long-distance telephone calls or postage. And but the problem is that they're demoralized. And people have given up on themselves. The polls are turning against Trump. They're turning against corporations. Over 80% of the people want higher taxes on the undertaxed super-rich and corporations. That's a lot of conservative voters. The same for cracking down on corporate crime. So the polls show a unity. They don't show polarization. People want the same things where they live, work, and raise their families, whether they're conservatives or liberals. They want a living wage. They want universal health care. They want tax reform. They want money brought back home from Washington to build infrastructure and public services. They want all these things. They come in over 75% of the polls, David. And these two parties keep harping on polarization, polarization. Well, they're creating the polarization. Why don't you go down where people live, work, and raise their families and see if they don't want better mass transit, if they don't want their roads and bridges repaired, if they don't want their schools maintained and repaired, and not to mention pollution controls.
And not to mention an overwhelming majority of Republicans and Democrats want national health care. Every other industrialized country has it. We don't, but we're going to take a little break just to mention that we are in our fundraising drive. We need you to show the love, support for WPFW, an invaluable community resource. 202-588-9739. You can also go to WPFWFM.org. Credit card or debit card accepted. We've got PayPal on our website, Cash App, $WPFWFM. I think we bring you voices that are invaluable, including our esteemed guest, Ralph Nader. I mean, you've mentioned just this. I think it's really important to mention, as you've been doing, the incredible, over 80% on issues like the minimum wage, universal health care, taxing the super rich and the corporations. I think the big beautiful bill over 10 years is giving something like a $4 trillion tax cut to the rich and corporations, and it would only take $350 billion over 10 years to give some subsidies for folks on Obamacare. It's just an extraordinary moment in our national landscape.
Not only that, David, am I on?
You are on, sir.
Yeah, David, let me amplify that. The best studies, including by an applied mathematician at Harvard, show that over $1 billion a day is ripped off in healthcare billing fraud and abuse in the U.S. That's over $360 billion a year. And Professor Malcolm Sparrow at Harvard said that was a conservative estimate. Now, who's doing the ripoff? It's the sellers. It's the hospital chains. You know, it's the drug industry. It's a corporate crime wave. And Dr. Oz, who heads Medicare and Medicaid for Trump, says he's determined to cut out waste, fraud, and abuse in the healthcare industry. Well, why doesn't he invite Professor Malcolm Spira down to Washington to show him how to do it?
Yeah, I mean, it's corruption gone amok, and you don't see it. It's not, I think, sufficiently covered in the news. You know, you get a lot of news about, you know, various corporate tragedies, violations, but it doesn't have an effect because the corporate interests and other interests have Congress in a stranglehold, and Congress is where the action is at. It's a difficult situation. I mean, you know, for example, with what's going on, the horror going on in Gaza and the West Bank, you know, that has what has a lot to do with it is that AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, has got Congress by the you-know-what.
Worse is a huge death undercount in Gaza because the Hamas has an interest in an undercount because they don't want the real death count to come out because there are people who accuse them of not being able to protect them and afford shelter after October 7th. But the best estimates by casualty specialists, David, is that some 600,000 people have been killed in Gaza. That's almost 200,000 more than all the U.S. soldiers killed in World War II. Gaza is a tiny strip of land, geographic size of Philadelphia. 2.3 million people were living there, and they're totally defenseless against the most advanced U.S. weapons supplied to Israel. They have no shelter, no food, medicine, water, health care. The hospitals have been bombed. The clinics have been bombed. The ambulances have been bombed. The apartment buildings, schools, mosques, everything is targeted by the Israeli Netanyahu regime. And so what does the press do? They keep mentioning the Hamas figures of just under 70,000. It's totally false. If it's 70,000, that means 96.5% of the people in Gaza are still alive. This is the greatest bombing campaign in military history on a tiny population that's completely defenseless. An expert on the power of explosives like missiles and F-16 bombs, Professor Rogers from the United Kingdom, he's an expert in this. In April, he said the equivalent of 6 Hiroshima bombs have been dropped on Gaza, and it must be now over 7 since April, easily. Can you imagine on an area the geographic size of Philadelphia with no shelter, no protection whatsoever? So let's talk about the 600,000 that the Biden and Trump administrations have been co-belligerently supporting, violating international law and 6 federal statutes, including the Leahy amendments that said you cannot have the U.S. government send military arms to countries that violate human rights. Well, I suppose a genocide by Netanyahu against Palestinians in Gaza qualifies as a violation of human rights. We have written this up in our newspaper. Are you aware we have a newspaper on Congress called the Capitol Hill Citizen? Go to thecapitolcitizen.com. It comes out 4 times a year, 40 pages, and it's unofficial journalism. It's the kind of journalism you like, David, on Congress. Yeah. The stories that are not covered. CapitolCitizen.com. May I make an offer to help raise money for your station?
I won't say no.
Okay. I've got a new book out called Civic Self-Respect, How People in Their Roles as Workers, Consumers, Taxpayers, Parents, Veterans can add a civic dimension to their daily rhythm without having to disrupt their lives too much. And I will send an autographed copy of Civic Self-Respect to any listener who sends WPFW $100. How's that?
Wonderful. Wonderful. I really appreciate it. We, unfortunately,
are going to have to end it there. We're going to have to get you back with a good phone connection next time. So appreciate all that you're doing. Ralph Nader, longtime consumer advocate and corporate critic, and the creator of innumerable public interest organizations, including the PIRG and Public Citizen. Thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, David, and support WPFW listeners.
All right, and we are in fundraising mode, as you know. We have difficulties in reaching Ralph Nader, but so it goes. We're doing the best we can. I think Ray Valencia, we're in fundraising mode, and we need people's support.
We are in fundraising mode, and we do need people's support, and we're reaching out to you. It's year end, and your donations are always tax deductible, and we so appreciate your time and attention. And, you know, as David and Ralph were talking about the consolidation of corporate media and the impact that is having, and we are community radio. We bring you local news. We take national news stories and provide a local news angle. We cover grassroots politics. We cover grassroots community issues. And so you as a stakeholder is so important. And we really encourage your continued involvement and engagement. And please call today. You can reach us at 202-588-9739. And again, your donation means so much. And we just want to thank you in advance for, again, your generosity and your support.
Yep, it's just so important. Again, the number 202-588-9739. We know a lot of you are experiencing financial difficulties. I mean, think about all the federal workers in our listener audience that have been laid off temporarily or permanently. Difficult times, but if you can afford it, we could really use your support. We need you to show the love. Sustainers are always welcome. Give whatever you can. No amount is too large. No amount is too small. Do sustainers. Give us your credit card, your debit card number, and you can always get end it if you want to end, and we'll get some sense of what our financial support is going forward. $10, $20, $30 a month, $100 a month if you can afford it. Just to support this wonderful community resource, our beloved WPFW-FM. Again, 202-588-9739, or go to WPFWFM.org. We've got a PayPal option on there. Got Cash App, $ WPFW-FM. And let's go on with our next important guest. Let me get to my notes here. And we understandably hear a lot of talk about the ICE raids plaguing several American cities. We also hear about Trump's new national security strategy that asserts that Europe is in decline in large part because of its immigration policy, that European governments need to stop suppressing far-right, anti-immigrant, arguably fascist parties. But we don't hear so much about the Christian nationalist movement, a major force driving these and other approaches of the executive branch. And joining us to talk about Christian nationalism is Dr. Matthew Taylor, a visiting scholar at the Center on Faith and Justice at Georgetown University. He's the author of The Violent Take It by Force, the Christian Movement That is Threatening Our Democracy. We're joined now by Matthew Taylor. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's great having you. Talk about the title of your book. What does it all mean for people that might not be initiated to this dangerous Christian nationalist movement?
Sure. So the book itself is really about January 6th and the Christian forces behind January 6th. But in the bigger picture, it's about how did so many evangelical Christians come to support and work with the Trump administration in lockstep. And the phrase, the violent take it by force, is actually comes from the mouth of Jesus himself. It's a quote from Matthew chapter 11, where Jesus is talking about the death or the impending death of his cousin, John the Baptist, and says, since the days of John the Baptist, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. And many Christians throughout history have interpreted that as kind of a descriptive. To be a Christian means you will suffer violence in the name of God. But in the lead up to January 6th, many, many Christians were taking that as actually a mandate and were citing that as to say the violent have taken our country from us. The violent are the ones who are trying to depose Donald Trump from office after the election, and we need to take our country back by force. And it became one of the rallying cries for January 6th, one of the Christian rallying cries for January 6th.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely serious. I mean, a lot of people aren't aware of the Christian presence at that horror of January 6th, 2021. But, you know, people think, well, Donald Trump is clearly not particularly Christian. I think, you know, at the memorial service for Charlie Kirk, after Charlie Kirk's widow said that she forgave the killer, and Trump said, you know, I can't forgive the killer. I hate him. you know, he's not a practitioner of Christian love, what Jesus was talking about. If you could just touch on that, and we've got limited time, but I think it's important to understand how the Christian right, how the Christian nationalists see Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know, Trump has never been an exemplar of Christian virtues or Christian values, and often you find when he tries to speak off the cuff about these things, he is, if anything, expressing the opposite. I think what has happened over the last decade is that Trump has become a religious symbol, and that many of the Christian nationalists, the ardent true believers who are sprinkled throughout the administration, who are his most devoted supporters, they see him as a sort of a flawed vessel, as somebody who is not perfectly Christian in any kind of moral sense, but who will be a bully on their behalf, who will be a defender of American Christianity and of American Christian nationalism. And so they see him as an ally. And some of those followers, though, really do see him as a religious symbol, as somebody who is anointed by God for office to accomplish certain purposes. And so for those folks, Trump really does have almost a quasi-messianic appeal, even as he is inserting within his Christian discourse all kinds of values that I would argue are quite antithetical to the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so odd. It's a strange political landscape that we're dealing with here. Let's look at some of the players who are practicing, I think we can say, Christian nationalism in our executive branch. So if you could talk about Russell Vogt, he's gotten a little bit more attention recently with the shutdown, but he's not, you know, he doesn't have the presence of Stephen Miller, but I think he's arguably a major power behind the throne, if you will. If you could talk about Office and Management and Budget Director Russell Vogt.
Yeah, Russell Vogt is kind of one of these bureaucratic Christian nationalists, kind of a technocrat. I mean, he is somebody who has really kind of come up within right-wing circles and within Christian nationalist circles as a kind of ideologue implanted within the government. And I would argue, alongside Stephen Miller, he is really one of the movers and shakers within the administration. The Office of Management and Budget has a huge purview in terms of the effects that it can have within the federal government. They are kind of they hold the purse strings within the federal government. And he is masterful in wielding the tools of that office to implement his agenda. He's a true believer himself, came from Wheaton College, one of the major evangelical educational institutions, although he has kind of a complicated legacy as an alumni there. But he is somebody who Trump has recognized is a very useful ally as somebody who can navigate these kind of bureaucratic systems like Stephen Miller and implement policies. And Trump is quite content with having these kind of hardline Christian supremacist Christian nationalist figures within the administration because they're seen as really good allies and effective movers and shakers. Even if ideologically they might not perfectly align with Trump's personal views on everything, he sees them as accomplishing his agenda. And Russell Vogt was really one of the architects of what's called Project 2025, this kind of blueprint for a right-wing takeover of American democracy that has become kind of the game plan for the Trump administration, the second Trump administration.
I mean, and you know, Trump, of course, during the campaign denied knowing anything about Project 2025, which is, I think he's, you know, admitted now, just like he's admitted what he said about certain countries being from a blank hole background. But I think he is admitting now that he's aware, very much aware of Project 2025, a blueprint for what's going on right now, and a lot of it is about anti-immigrant rhetoric and actions with all the ICE raids. If you could just touch on that, I mean, you've done some work on finding the videos that what the Border Patrol is setting out to recruit people. If you could talk about these videos, they're really kind of extraordinary.
Yeah, so there's one of the major shifts between the first Trump administration and the second Trump administration is just how much in the second Trump administration actors like Vogt, like Pete Hegseth, like Stephen Miller, like J.D. Vance are overtly utilizing Christian nationalist messaging, Christian nationalist memes, Christian nationalist imagery in their own social media, in official social media, in official recruitment videos. And so you've seen they've gotten posted online in different places. I think they're mostly online advertisements. These kind of overlaid videos where they're using Bible quotations, be it the Lord's Prayer or Isaiah chapter 6, a very famous passage, the kind of calling of the prophet Isaiah, as recruitment for ICE, for the Department of Homeland Security, for Customs and Border Protection, for the military. And so they're mixing these overt Christian nationalist themes into the messaging from the federal government as part of the appeal to get more recruits in, especially in a place like ICE. I mean, you think about who are the people in American society who look around and see elderly Latina grandmothers getting hauled out of their cars and thrown to the ground by masked agents and say, that's what I want to be doing right now. I mean, those are the kind of people that are getting recruited right now into ICE. And often the messaging of that recruitment is being facilitated through the symbolism and quotations and memes of Christian nationalism to say, this is a Christian purpose, right? So DHS video that was put out that was using Isaiah 6 is a very famous passage where God calls the prophet Isaiah, and Isaiah's response is, "Here I am, send me." But that verse was getting layered into imagery of ICE agents on these raids and pulling people out of cars. And so it's a sense that there's a religious calling for people. There's a religious vocation to go in and do these hardline things, to do these things that are repressing migrants, because that is God's work, according to that the implicit messaging behind that.
Yeah. And we should say, I think it needs to be emphasized that this Christian nationalist movement that has such sway in the executive branch, it is a white movement. We're talking, you know, ICE is going after people of color, brown people, black people. They're not likely to stop a white person on the street and drag them out of their car or whatever. I mean, it's a white movement, and it's affecting not only what's going on here in the United States, but we're saying that Europe is on the, you know, going towards the dustbin of history, if you will, because they have, you know, relatively, certainly compared to the United States, a looser immigration policy. It's kind of the replacement theory gone amok. If you could just touch on the white nature of Christian nationalism.
Yeah, I would say the way that I would phrase it is that Christian nationalism in the United States is an overwhelmingly white phenomenon, but not exclusively white phenomenon. So there's different forms of Christian nationalism, different emphases. There's really kind of three major strands of Christian nationalism that all come out with different theologies and different approaches that are all trying to insinuate their influence into the Trump administration. And most of those forms are very comfortable with blending a kind of white ethnic identity with a kind of Christian nationalist identity. Now, there are more multi-ethnic forms of Christian nationalism, both in the United States and around the globe. And that also can help us understand why it is that so many, especially Latino folks, voted for Trump in 2024. There's a very strong Christian nationalist appeal to Latino communities. And oftentimes, Latino Christian communities in the U.S. are charismatic and evangelical and are often very pro-Israel. So often there's this kind of Christian Zionism and Israeli kind of advocacy going on that is also gets blended with this Christian nationalism. So yes, it's a complicated landscape. There are, you have people in the Christian nationalist space who are picking up on kind of neo-Nazi and white supremacist themes, and you see that in some of the messaging and some of the imagery. But then there are also these more multi-ethnic components to that Christian nationalist landscape that are very aligned around Israel and have kind of a tenuous alliance with some of the more white supremacist angles.
Yeah, I mean, with the idea of what Israel needs to be in ascendance in order to make way for the second coming. I mean, the ironies of, you know, Jesus was born in a manger and his parents were on the move. I mean, the irony of going after immigrants, many whom, the majority of whom are in fact Christian, but they have the wrong skin color. And yet there is support amongst the Latino community for Trump, but apparently that is dropping. I wanted you to touch on our Secretary of Defense, or I guess I'm supposed to say Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth. You've got a video, have found a video showing him reciting the Lord's Prayer while there's military inaction overlay being seen. If you could talk about Pete Hegseth.
Yeah, Pete Hegseth is a true ideologue in this space, has been for a very long time. He is very closely associated with a Christian nationalist leader, overtly Christian nationalist leader named Doug Wilson, who is headquartered in Moscow, Idaho, but leads a national network of churches called the Communion of Evangelical Reformed Churches, or Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches, CREC. Pete Hegseth belongs to a CREC church, has talked about Doug Wilson as an influence on him. And Doug Wilson, who has gotten some media attention in recent months, he did a big interview with CNN where he was openly advocating for women to lose the right to vote, at least as individuals. And Pete Hegseth retweeted that interview and with a very affirmative message. So he's kind of a fanboy of Doug Wilson and uses a lot of the same talking points that you hear coming out of Doug Wilson's network. Very hardline Christian nationalist vision. Pete Hegseth also has a number of tattoos on his body that reference the Crusades. He wrote a book titled American Crusade, where he came right up to the line of advocating violence against Muslims. He said violence against Muslims is not necessary in the medieval period. It's not necessary in the present yet. Right? So he's openly kind of playing with the ideas of Crusades, Crusader imagery, he has this very profound Islamophobia that gets mixed in with that as well. And yes, in the aftermath of the Charlie Kirk assassination in September, Hegseth posted a video, and it was on official Pentagon social media channels, of him praying the Lord's Prayer with troops, but then the scene of him praying that prayer in the audio is interspersed with images of the U.S. military on bombing campaigns or on aggressive raids. And so as they are praying, God's kingdom come, God's will be done, you are seeing American soldiers attacking people. And I think it's inescapable to see that this is trying to tie together this narrative of America as a godly and Christian and white nation and say that this is it is righteous what our military does because it is godly. And Hegseth has been very open about linking the work of the U.S. military with these themes of Christian nationalism, of Christian supremacy, of Christian power. And that's just a very, very dangerous way to think about our multi-ethnic, very kind of lethal military. Once you start blending that with religious rhetoric and religious ideas and cultivating what Hegseth calls this warrior mentality, you can easily see how that could slip over into more of a crusader mentality.
Yeah, I mean, it's a frightening scenario. Just in the minute we have left, if you could talk about J.D. Vance. He's the one that went to some European conference, I think, back in February and said, you know, you got to let these right-wing, arguably fascist parties speak up because you're going downhill with your immigration policy. Just if you could touch on that, we just have less than a minute left.
Sure. Yeah, J.D. Vance is kind of an avatar of the more Catholic wing of the Christian nationalist landscape. He is has associated himself with some very, very hardline traditionalist Catholics, has espoused agreement with their views over the years. He himself is a convert to Catholicism, and that you often find that in Christian nationalist circles is kind of the converts. It's not the raised in the faith folks, it's the new believers that come in and become really hardline. And has echoed far right talking points, sometimes even fascist and neo-Nazi talking points in Europe, has expressed support for those groups. And that's really a dynamic that we see going on all over the world. These religious nationalists, not just Christian nationalists, are banding together around populist themes in support of authoritarian leaders, and you have this kind of pluralist fascist coalition that is growing around the world that is against democracy and is using the themes of religious nationalism across a wide variety of political landscapes.
We're going to have to end it there. I really appreciate you joining us. I've been speaking with Dr. Matthew Taylor, a visiting scholar at the Center on Faith and Justice at Georgetown University. He's the author of The Violent, Take It by Force, the Christian Movement that is Threatening Our Democracy. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, David.
Really appreciate it. And we are going to close out with a little fundraising drive. Interesting show, don't you think, Ms. Valencia?
Well, very interesting, considering the times we're in, and we're approaching the midterms coming up this year, and all these issues are on the table. And, you know, the interesting thing happening within the Republican Party, you know, the wedge issue, even among evangelical Christians. So, I mean, this is definitely a space to follow.
Yeah, I mean, and you're hearing it here on WPFW FM, here in the nation's capital. Please show the love. We need you to step up. We're nowhere near our $500 goal for the show, but don't do it for the particular show. Do it now for the station that is WPFW, 202-588-9739. You can also go to WPFWFM.org. Credit cards, debit cards accepted. We love new listeners supporting the show. Sustainers, so important that you join us and try to show the love ASAP for this show, but more importantly, as I said, for WPFW FM. And that is, going to do it for our show. Thanks to our wonderful engineer for pulling us through. Not an easy show. Appreciate your help. Coming up, the extraordinary Lady Murr, and don't forget the blues. Don't touch that dial. She's a wonderful host. And note, there's a special edition of To Heal DC with Joni Eisenberg from 5 to 7 today. And it's honoring the 70th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott and lessons for now. Really important, not just historical. How can we apply what happened so many years ago to what's going on now? Check it out. That's going to do it for our show. Thank you so much for listening, and be safe.
Pink, Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Mutual aid, the act of taking care of each other, comes in many forms. One such form is supporting WPFW. At a time when so many are hurting, if you are doing well financially and want to do good, we invite you to give the gift of WPFW. Emancipatory media is truly the gift that keeps on giving. A tax-deductible donation can be made anytime at WPFWFM.org or from Sunday, December 14th through Saturday, December 20th, during our pledge drive by calling 800-222-9739. It is your continued support that allows us to do the work of building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
Equal Portions is delighted to join Jazz and Justice Radio, WPFW, every Monday at 1 p.m. We're talking everything food justice, interviewing folks across all sectors, and playing the hottest new DMV music with your host, Stacia Lemira.
Hey, y'all. On Equal Portions, we'll be discussing all aspects of the way we interact with food, from the problems affecting our communities to the history and the story of the food around us and the local individuals within the food community. That's Equal Portions, Mondays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers, the Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jammin' Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
Fellow members and supporters of WPFW, as you contemplate your year in giving, if you are required to take a minimum distribution from your IRA, please join many of our donors and make a qualified charitable distribution from your IRA to WPFW. A QCD can satisfy all or part of your RMD from your IRA, and you can exclude that amount from your taxable income. To learn more about these and other tax-wise giving methods, please visit our website or send us an email at plangiving@wpfw.org. And as always, thank you so much for your continued support.
This season, Joy is taking over Anacostia. From December 11th through the 22nd, Anacostia is celebrating 12 Days of Joy along Marion Barry and MLK Jr. Avenue Southeast. Festive, free events and experiences from the annual Emoja Holiday Market to hands-on maker workshops and live concerts. With a Joy Pass, there will be surprise drops of joy with prizes and treats at participating businesses. 12 Days of Joy and Holiday Magic in Anacostia. Art2Gogo.org for more info.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, Washington.
WPFW, Washington.